Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is June 29, 2016. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 17,694, the NASDAQ at 4779, and the S&P at 2070. And that sounds very calm, doesn't it? But in light of the last few days of market volatility, it is one thing to show that what goes down must come up as well. So people need to sometimes stay calm in these situations, as we saw the markets recover from Friday's announcement of the Brexit. But tonight I am talking about transitions in life, jobs, retirement, transitions that may affect your financial picture and how to anticipate and prepare for them. We will take your questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Lori's in the studio with us this evening and we'll answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. Again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So if you have questions, you can go through that website and email them to me, and I will respond in time. I know it's a lovely, lovely, beautiful evening tonight. You're probably all running home to have a barbecue or something like that. But if you are someone who's going through a period of transition, you have questions about how it might affect you financially, you're welcome to give us a call. I love questions. You can ask questions live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. But that's when Lori will write that question down and bring it in to me. So that phone number is 610-758-8810. I think it's always important to talk about transitions because we do go through so many in our life, and there could be emotional ramifications of transition, things that we have to get through, but there's quite often financial considerations as well. And I had done a show with Rod Young and his wife Lori last year on June 10th, 2015. Recall that podcasts from old shows are on the website wdiy.org or Your Financial Choices. .com. But we had done a show to discuss the financial and emotional aspects of transitions. Lori is a counselor and Rod is a financial advisor. And I thought I would bring back some of those highlights of that show and focus in on just a few of life's transitions that we experience. And next week, I'm going to cover the importance of having conversations with your family about financially related issues, including financial support of children, of parents, sharing estate, wishes, and more. Because I think it's important to have conversations about financial issues. Generations, you know, our parents' generations maybe weren't as comfortable talking about their financial situation. Some parents today don't tell their children. They really don't have enough money to be giving them gifts and loans and all of that. They just keep doing it. They don't want their kids to think maybe that they're not capable, or they just still want to help their children so much. So sometimes you have to have those conversations, because if parents keep up that kind of giving, it may bankrupt them so that they can't afford their own lifestyle in their retirement and their elderly years, etc. So next week, I want to talk about how you have those conversations and why you have those conversations, certain ramifications about open dialogue on that. So tonight, I will focus on transitions with life changes and not including death, because that is obviously a huge transition. There's lots to talk about. Of course, if you have questions, you can always call in and ask about that. But tonight I was going to focus in on some of the things we deal with throughout our living years and job changes and retirement. So first I want to review what Lori Young had said about some of the emotional aspects of transition. And this is a little bit of from the outline we had used back then on June 10th, 2015. We were talking about transitional issues that affect finances, the sale of a home, the desire for divorce, choosing between one's mental health or financial health, living with the unknown of whether they'll find another job, sharing a new job, having a child, maternity leave, how to manage energy levels for work when some kind of emotional or personal crisis has come up. Lori had mentioned happiness levels do not change with a certain base level of income. And of course, only each person can say what will help them find happiness. And then she went on to talk about some guiding principles of transition. And I'll talk about those in just a minute, but we have a caller on line one. We have Nancy from Macungie. Nancy, hi, can you hear me?
Just barely.
Hi, how can I help you?
I have a question about Social Security.
Okay.
I am divorced and I am planning to take half of my former husband's Social Security because it's significantly higher than what my Social Security would be. But I had heard that the maximum that I can receive is half of what his full Social Security would be at age 66.
Mm-hmm.
That if I wait till age 70, I cannot get the bump up in Social Security, that the maximum I can receive would be his full Social Security at age 66. Is that correct?
Right. It's called his primary insurance amount, his PIA, which is at full retirement age. And different people, depending on what year they were born, have different full retirement ages. So I'm guessing if you guys are already in your 60s, his full retirement age is probably 66. But you could collect sooner than that, but you... Sometimes people think, oh, if I wait till 70, I'll get a higher benefit. But that is not the case. Anyone waiting till age 70, that's only for their own benefit. A spousal benefit will always be based on that PIA amount, that full retirement amount basis. So,
okay.
Nancy, if you collect before full retirement age, though, you will take a permanent reduction of even the spousal benefit. Are you
right.
Full retirement age yet?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, so I'm just thinking ahead for the future.
Very good. I love that.
But if I took my Social Security at 62, then at 66, I could not take half of his full retirement. I can't get a bump up at 66 if I take it at 62. Is that correct?
Right. Typically what happens is when you go into Social Security and begin collecting before full retirement age,
yes,
they're going to tell you to collect the higher of either benefit, the higher of your own benefit or your spousal benefit.
Okay.
So if you collect early, you're locked in. And at 62, you would be eligible for that spousal benefit.
Right, but then I would be locked into the lower amount forever.
Right, right, a permanent reduction.
Good, thank you. That was very helpful.
Okay, good, Nancy. Good planning ahead. So good luck with that. Thank you for calling. I appreciate the calls. The phone number is 610-758-8810. If you have questions, you could talk live on air or off air, and we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we are talking about transitions tonight. Nancy had just called and had a question about divorce and Social Security. I will mention that you have to be not married at the time you go to collect on a former spouse's benefit, and you had to have been married at least 10 years to that former spouse. And interestingly, do you know that you could be subsequently married to somebody else, divorce them, and be single again, and still be able to collect on that former spouse that you had of 10 years. So it's not as if you remarry, you never get to go back to that former spouse's benefit. You just have to be unmarried at the time. It doesn't say how many times you have to be married or not married. So that was interesting, I thought. So it's important when you also go to apply for benefits that involve a former spouse, you want to make sure that you have your marriage certificate and their Social Security number. So make sure before you leave the house, you grab that information. Let's see. So we are talking about transitions, and I'm going to talk more about divorce in just a little bit. But back to talking about some of the emotional aspects of transition. When Lori Young was on the show back on June 10th of 2015, she had some guiding principles of transition, and I just thought these were really powerful. She said, the process is uncomfortable. It could be scary, strange, ungrounding, chaotic. She said to respect the timing of things. I thought that was really important too. Sometimes you have to let things take their time. Find good information and trust yourself that you could make a sound decision. For example, how do you feel about this decision in your transition? Number four, all situations are unique and avoid comparisons. That's really important because sometimes people will tell you what their situation is and you think the same thing might apply, and it could be very different circumstances. Don't always assume you're coming from the same place. And then fifth, she said positive visioning, which of course is one of my favorites. Always visualize positive outcomes. That makes a big difference as well. So we're talking about significant financial transitions, and in life, what might that include? It could include education, college graduation, what happens after that, marriage, that's a big transition, having a child, and of course, divorce. Those are some of the life changes I want to touch on tonight. Job changes, what kind of job changes might we go through, and what can we watch out for when we're going through those jobs? Changes. They could be for the better or for the worse. And then lastly, retirement. So some of life changes that we need to pay attention to. College graduation. We had a few weeks ago a guest on Loretta Tubiello Har, and we talked about college and saving for college and paying for college and student loan consolidations. There are so many financial ramifications to going to college. One ramification is, you know, it could be really great for your career. College graduates have a better record for employment, for retaining jobs, fewer unemployment issues. So there are reasons and benefits of having a college degree. But when we talk about at the end of every show saying be proactive, not reactive, really try to be reactive even before you go to college. Take time to consider the cost of your education and the potential earning power you have, and whether or not you want to burden yourself with the debt that you may not be able to afford to repay. So if you get an art degree, nothing wrong with an art degree, but an art degree from an Ivy League school and an art degree from a public university, which one in the end might be less burdensome for you? Well, that Ivy League degree could be quite costly. You have loans, financially strap your family. Maybe your parents are paying for it, and you think, well, that's okay, they're paying for it. I'm coming out of school without any debt. Well, that's wonderful, but it also means less assets that they may eventually be able to gift to you or that you would inherit, because money out of their pocket has a financial impact on the family. Going back to a show we did, I think, 2 weeks ago, Family Inc., where we talk about having a financial CEO who's managing the labor part of the family business and the assets of the family business. Is this a good family decision? You know, whether they're paying for it or you're paying for it. So think that through. You want to know what the cost of that education is and the potential income that you could get from that college education. You know, sometimes I think too, you know, there used to be the joke about you go to school for your degree, the MRS. I mean, people said that's what I went to school for. We know that's not true. I'm a working woman, but I did meet my husband when I was 17 years old. So that was the big joke. But I will say, for anyone who's going to school thinking perhaps the career they're going to get out of it is going to be their financial windfall or the person that they meet who might be going to med school or something like that, you can't count on that. You want to make sure that if you're investing in education for yourself, you're doing it for the right reasons, and it's something that you'll love doing and that you can have a career, because you really need to count on yourself as well. You can't always anticipate or expect that there might be a spouse there in your future, because it may or may not happen. So you want to make sure you're making good decisions in the moment for yourself. So now we've graduated from college. We thought that through. We went to, you know, an affordable university. We got a decent career. And now we've met someone. And we're thinking, this is it. This is great. We're going to be wonderful together. One of the pieces that people don't often talk about is how much stress financial decisions are on a marriage. So one thing that I would suggest is that you sit down with that significant other or know kind of their financial habits before you get too serious, before you get to that maybe that stage of being a fiancé. But at least even if you did get to that stage and now you have a fiancé, you for sure better make sure that you're sitting down and talking about what the finances might look like and how you each handle money, because this could be a stressor in your future relationship. So when you talk to your partner, you want to talk about, are you a good saver? If they say they're a good saver, have you seen that they're a good saver? Do you see savings in the bank account? Do you see that they have a credit card debt? Do they have a loan on their car? Have they leveraged everything that they own? You want to kind of talk about those things. If someone's a good saver, then typically you're going to see that they have money in the bank, or they don't have a car loan, or they don't have credit card debt. And if they say, no, I'm not comfortable having credit card debt, those are all good signs. Where I have seen a lot of stress is where two people come into a marriage and maybe one's a great, great saver and the other one's a spender, spender, spender. So what happens, I think there's some natural attraction, because the person who saves, saves, saves really would maybe like to not be so tight-fisted and would like to spend a little bit more and live a little bit more. So they're attracted to that person who's like living the life. And then that person who's living the life is burdened subconsciously from all that debt they have and all those liabilities they have. They're really attracted to someone who saves because they think they're going to save them and rescue them and help them and maybe make them better savers. But then all of a sudden you really get into real life. They are together and there's a lot of conflict then. So it could still work and it could still be beneficial to each other. You just have to find out if you love each other enough to get through that. So really sit down and try to understand each other's financial shortcomings or attributes, because it could be really good that you have someone who's conscientious and a saver. That could really help you. You just have to be ready for it. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We had a call from Walt in Brinecksville. Walt, I'm going to take your question as soon as I get back. Back in a sec.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on this lovely, lovely evening. Walt from Brinecksville called and had a question about Social Security, which is great because I was talking about retirement, or I will be talking about retirement and the transition into retirement and some of the factors you have to think about as you're going into retirement. And this dovetails quite nicely into Nancy's question as well about Social Security. And Walt had mentioned that early retirement under Social Security is age 62. And full retirement age for him is 66. And if you collect at 62, you have a permanent reduction in your benefit, but you are collecting for more years. That is true, Walt. And so the question is, Lori, hey, which is better? Collect early for more years or collect later for a higher benefit? How do you know what to do? Which is better? Well, Walt, what happens with Social Security, the benefits are based on your life expectancy under, you know, whatever guidelines they use. So they say Walt's life expectancy is, you know, 20 years. And then they say the present value of that future stream of money that Walt has built up, If he collects at 62, it's this lower amount because he's going to live 20 years. He's going to collect it for the 20 years. He's going to get a lower amount. If your life expectancy is that 20 and you don't collect till 66, they're going to give you a higher amount because now from 62 to 66, that's 4 years. You waited, so now you're only going to be collecting for 16 years. So if you wait, you're collecting for a shorter period of time, a higher amount. If you collect early, you're collecting a lower amount for a longer period of time. In the end, if you live exactly to their life expectancy calculations, you would collect, in essence, the same amount of money. Now, I'm not factoring in if you take that money and invest it and all of that. We're just looking at the pure numbers. So what people have to do is a little bit of a guessing game, a little bit of, you know, forecasting or telling the future. And what you can factor in when you're trying to make that decision is looking at longevity in your family, looking at your own health, looking at your own circumstances. So some of the things you have to consider when you're deciding to collect early or not would be, number one, if you're 62 and you have no other money and you cannot work anymore, well, Social Security becomes a nice answer for you. If, on the other hand, you have enough money, you do not need the Social Security yet, and now it's kind of like, do I or don't I? I don't really need it, but should I? Now I would say, well, what does your family history look like? Did your parents live into their, 80s? Are you healthy? Do you take medication? Were you a smoker? Was there stroke in your family? Was there heart attacks in your family? What does that picture look like? And if everyone lives a long time, and, that could be a reason to wait. Because then the idea is you're going to live longer than what the Social Security life expectancy factors would be. So then you'd want the higher amount for a longer period of time. But an additional factor that I would say married couples have to think about is who would have the higher benefit and who do we expect to survive? If you've listened on prior shows, you've heard that women typically are living longer than men. Quite often women live in poverty more often than men because they don't have the same retirement account savings and they don't have the same work records for the higher Social Security benefits in general. So sometimes what we like to look at is if the husband is the higher earner and he delays collecting, then he is giving or potentially giving a higher benefit to his surviving spouse. So that's some of the other factors to consider. All right? So that is retirement planning, and it's also sometimes survivor planning that you're doing. So, Walt, I hope that helped. I hope that answered your question. Lots of factors go in there, and typically we will present that information to clients when we're doing an analysis, and I have had clients tell me everyone in the family dies at 62. Well, then I'm probably going to say then it might be something you want to do. All right, hope that helps. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about transitions tonight and the financial impact of those transitions. I had talked about college and college cost. You graduate, you find someone you love, you want to get together, and there could be a lot of savings in that. There could also be a lot of costs in that, too, because the next thing you know, you're having a baby, maybe. Well, having a child can cost a lot of money. And in the past, I've worked on a number of estates where high net worth individuals, and it's like, wow, what's the common factor here? Oh, they don't have children. That's not always the case. I've just have made some observations on that. Children do cost money. It is wonderful having children. I have three myself. It is wonderful. I wouldn't give it up. I'm fortunate enough to have been able to have them, and I know that's not always an option for many people. But for folks who are thinking about having children, from a financial perspective, a lot of folks will say, I want to give my children everything. And I have seen where people will forego their own lifestyle opportunities to give so much to their children. And if you want to do that, you really need to balance what you want to do as far as providing for your children, because you really don't want to compromise your own retirement years by giving so much to your children who have an opportunity to go on and earn their own money and take care of themselves as well. So I ran a calculation, though, I missed the website. I forgot writing down the website. But I had run a little calculation for the annual cost of having a child. And I put in three children, ages 15. These are not the ages of my children, but 15, 12, and 9. Two parents in the household living in the Northeast. And the cost of raising a child, age 15, was $20,000. And this was for people making over $108,000. For the three kids, it was $58,000 per year. The cost included housing, food, health care, child care, education, high school education and lower education, not college, transportation, and miscellaneous expenses. So it's not a light decision to have children. It's an emotional decision usually, but don't forget about the financial aspects of it too. You want to think about that. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about transitions. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 81 degrees under fair skies. Tonight, clear, lows around 58. Thursday, sunny, highs around 87. Friday, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms with highs around 84. Saturday and Sunday, mostly sunny skies each day with highs in the mid to upper 80s. The time is now 6:30 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you. I had another question come in. My wife and I are at the beginning of a divorce. She was the accountant in the home I'm no longer in. What do I do if my old tax returns are missing when I go to buy a new home after the divorce is final? One of the things that you want to make sure happens to the extent that you have access to the house is to get any important documents, etc. But when you go through a divorce, if you have each have an attorney, your attorney should request any of that information from the other attorney. They are required to produce those documents. They're going to ask for, if you don't have access to it, they can produce the tax returns, pay stubs of the spouse if you're divorcing, because you're going to want to look at what kind of pay they have, their retirement documents, the value of those retirement accounts, values of the savings accounts, basically even a budget of the spending and cost of, you know, how they've been living, because there may be some equalization of alimony, or if there's children, child support. So if you're each represented by an attorney, your attorney will be requesting all of that information, and they will have to produce it. It's like an order. I forgot all the terms, but it's an order. So probably the sooner that gets done, the better, before someone has a chance to kind of destroy it and say it's not available. But if for any reason someone does say that tax returns aren't available, you can get copies of the tax return or transcripts from the IRS for any tax returns that have been filed in the past few years. So that is always available as well. Okay, thanks for the question. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. The show's moving quite quickly tonight, and I love the calls, and I love the questions. Thank you so much. That's my favorite part of the show. So I had mentioned one of the transitions we have might be having children, so we want to make sure we understand the cost involved, especially if you're having children also outside of a union where maybe you have two different households and one person's trying to claim the child and the other person's trying to claim the child. How this works at tax time is whoever files first usually gets to claim the child and the other one has to prove otherwise. It could be quite complicated and such a mess. So you do want to make sure that you understand how things are working and the implications of having children. But again, both before marriage and having children, I suggest that you have emergency reserves, and that also through this process of maybe coming out of college and getting your first apartment, possibly even a home, that you don't overbuy on housing. Okay? So I have seen people buy houses with making less money than I do, buying a house you know, to the tune of like half of what I do, and buying a house three times of what I would ever pay for a house. And sometimes I kind of shake my head thinking, do they not have perspective? Because once you lock into housing, you know, it's kind of hard to get out of that. And you want to avoid foreclosures or short sales at all costs. It's just a little bit of a nightmare. So don't overbuy on housing. If you think you can afford a $1,000 a month apartment, but there's one just as nice and nice of an area at $700, that's a great idea. You're saving that much money a month. And there's calculators out there that can tell you over time, $300 a month times whatever interest rate you might make on your accounts, times however many years you might be able to do that. Maybe you're in a low-cost apartment for 3 or 4 years. That gives you that extra money that you're saving for your emergency reserve, or that could be used for a down payment at some point on a house. You also don't want to lock into other fixed expenses like credit card payments. When you're buying things that are just material belongings, you know, fancy clothes or cars or things in your house, things that collect that at some point you're just going to have to get rid of. And we all were collectors at some point. I'm lucky I have maturity at this point. I used to like collect things when I was like in high school. And I kind of got over that because I realized it didn't have a purpose. So think before you buy, because that all impacts your opportunities later. So the less you spend on those fixed expenses or furniture or cars, as I said, the more you're going to be able to save for your emergency reserves. Emergency reserves are what give you opportunities later, and I'll talk about that in a minute when I talk about jobs. If you're married, will there be two earners? Are both of you going to be working? If so, you want to think about what would childcare expenses be before you have children. So you're married, you're both working, now you're thinking about having kids. What is that going to look like? Childcare is a fortune. And before you have children, you don't know how expensive childcare is. So you want to think all that through. You might say, well, mom or dad will watch the baby. Well, mom or dad may not want to watch the baby. I'm just saying. All of a sudden, mom and dad are moving to Florida, and there you are thinking your childcare provider just ditched on you. Well, if they do that, is it still going to make sense for you to work? If you still need to work, maybe it's for healthcare reasons, you know, the healthcare cost, are you going to be able to afford the childcare? Do you have a friend that you could swap childcare with? A friend, when I was first having kids, another friend and I, we were both working part-time, and that's what we did. Our kids went to daycare maybe once or twice a week, and then we would watch each other's kids once or twice a week. And it worked out really well. The kids got to play together, but we also weren't doing it all the time, so much so that, you know, we were burdened by it at all. But it did cut down on our childcare expenses, and that was really nice. When we talk about financial transitions of college, marriage, having children, all adds sometimes financial burdens, adds stress in a marriage. Maybe we find ourselves getting a divorce. It might not be caused by those financial stresses. It could be any number of other reasons as well. But divorce is expensive, and even more so if you have children. So the more steps you take before marriage and before children to have discussions around financial matters, the better. And I was looking this up, and I found a reference book, which I thought was pretty good. I mean, and I only looked through it very briefly, but I had found a chapter on the cost of divorce, the financial impact of divorce. But what the book was, it was called Should I Keep Trying to Work It Out? It was written by Alan Hawkins, PhD, and Tamara Fackrell, JD. It was written in 2009, and it popped up on the website for the Utah State University. The website was divorce.usu.edu. And there was a little highlight of this section that I was referring to, the Financial Impact. And again, this was written back in 2009, but I thought it was interesting, so I jotted it down. Researchers estimate divorcing individuals would need more than a 30% increase in income on average to maintain the same standard of living they had prior to their divorce. About 1 in 5 women fall into poverty as a result of divorce. 3 out of 4 divorced mothers don't receive full payment of child support. Most men experience a loss in their standard of living in the years after a divorce as well, a loss generally about 10 to 40% depending on circumstances. It went on to say financial challenges as a result of divorce are common. Process of divorce is expensive. The income that used to support one household is split and now must be used to support 2 households. All possessions, money, financial assets, and the debt acquired during and sometimes before marriage are divided between former spouses. Researchers estimate divorcing individuals need more than a 30% increase in income on average to maintain that same standard of living. So divorce is financially stressful, especially for poorer couples. On the other hand, researchers have learned that a stable marriage is one of the best paths to building and maintaining wealth. So it might be something you want to have those conversations about, which also led me to think about next week's subject, which was talking about having conversations around financial issues. It's amazing how many people come to our office to talk about financial planning, and one just says, I don't know anything, I don't want to know anything, I don't care, and the other spouse does all the financial decisions, all the financial making decisions. I think it's really, really important to be engaged. You don't have to understand everything, but you have to understand enough to ask questions, to know the red flags, to make sure that you are protected yourself in the event anything should happen, whether you lose a spouse or you separate. So you want to be somewhat informed, but again, having some of those conversations before you ever get married and before you have children can make a difference. Let me move into talking about job changes. If you do have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can ask questions live on air or off air, whatever is more comfortable. So job changes. Recall that I had said how important it is to have emergency reserves. That emergency reserve, the reason I think it's so important is that's when people have opportunities. That's where they can take risk or chances because they know they have a backup plan. Emergency reserves can take a number of forms. Emergency reserves can be money in your bank account. It could be Roth IRAs. I love Roth IRAs. Your original contributions can always come out. I like people to save them as long as they can, but it's just to know that you have that as a backup if you need it. Some people will use a credit card as an emergency reserve. I don't like that idea at all, but it's there if there was a problem, or a home equity. Let's say you're someone who has a lot of equity in your home. Maybe you don't even have a mortgage anymore. Before you change jobs, before you retire, go get a line of credit or a home equity. Sign up for it so that you have that to tap if you need it. Because once you're not working, it's very difficult to get those. So that is something that you want to think about if you're in a period of transition. So that is a backup. So when you have those emergency reserves or a backup plan, you might be in a better position to maybe do a job change. Maybe you are so stressed out, your job's killing you, and you want to kind of step down, do something a little less stressful. It means you might get paid a little bit less. Are your emergency reserves going to be able to backfill where you need that, or your savings or your investments? Maybe you want a promotion, could get a promotion, and it might mean you have to take a little more risk on your plate. Maybe in your position, it might be for a bonus. So maybe you're going to be taking a little bit less salary with the potential for bonus, depending on, the sales you make or something like that. You can't take those opportunities if you don't have a backup plan, or you're not. It's not that you can't take them. You just may not be positioned well enough to be able to take more risk with job changes. But when you are looking at job changes, you also want to make sure that you're understanding the benefits that you're getting on the position that you may currently have versus the position that you could be going to. It's not just your pay. It could be your wages, your bonuses, your 401k contributions. How much is the employer putting in? How much do they only match? What kind of health care benefits do they provide their employees? Maybe in one position you don't have to pay anything, in another one you do. Maybe in your current position, your family coverage is, you know, you pay $100 a month. And what you don't realize, in another position, the family coverage may cost you $1,000 a month. So you really want to make sure when you're going through periods of change with jobs that you are comparing apples to apples. Okay? There's other things to consider too. Flexibility in your job. Are you going to be traveling? Are you going to have other out-of-pocket expenses? Do you have to use your own car? Lots of other considerations in job changes. Folks, when we come back, we're going to talk about some transitions in retirement. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about transitions tonight. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And always available through yourfinancialchoices.com. Just shoot me an email through that site, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. We're talking about transitions, life changes. I know there's lots and lots of transitions we could be talking about. We just happen to be talking about marriage and babies and divorce and job changes, and we're going to talk about retirement as well. But I have a phone call right now from Sarah in Bethlehem. Hello, Sarah. Can you hear me? Oh, it's off air. I apologize. It's off air. Okay, Sarah, your question is, Dad lost his job at a casino. He is 61. What can he do during this transition period to be smart? He's married, and she has medical benefits for him. For example, unemployment, but anything else. They have a 401k. Should they draw from it to pay off credit card debt? Oh, Sarah, there are a lot of questions in here. But this is good that you're thinking this through. I think it's great. I love people who are proactive. And I think the point is thinking about options. He lost his job. If he is available for work, he can apply for unemployment, as you've said here. For example, unemployment, but what else can he do? Even when you're unemployed and can apply for unemployment benefits, you still can work a part-time job. So if he is available for work, he may be able to see if he could go get some type of part-time job that could supplement the unemployment income. Now, I don't know off the top of my head how much he can make, but he can make a certain amount without it affecting, I think, the unemployment benefit. One thing I love about retail, because my history is in retail. I love retail. If he's never worked retail, quite often you can get a job in a retail establishment, and it's usually fun, and if you like people, it could be great. And quite often what I have seen in retail in recent years is really a push toward part-time employment and very part-time employment. They may not even offer him full-time employment. So that might be something he might want to think about doing. if he could get some type of part-time job that could supplement some unemployment without necessarily hurting it if he is hoping to get a job somewhere else. Now, he may feel that he doesn't have any other opportunities and whatever his job was at the casino, maybe that's all he's ever done his whole life and he just would be at a loss. If he has to be in the workforce, though, in order to get available to work, for unemployment. So we know that he has to be available, otherwise he's not going to qualify for the unemployment. As far as the health care, that's great that his spouse has medical benefits for him. That is one of the biggest costs in retirement or when someone loses a job. There's always COBRA available, but that's great if he's covered on her benefits. As far as the 401k and drawing from it to pay off the credit card debt, well, I don't know how much the credit card debt is. What happens with the 401k, your dad's 61, so he's already over age 59 and a half, so he can withdraw money without a penalty, but he still would have income tax consequences. So I'm not sure when he lost his job, but you don't want to pull out too much money out of the 401k if he doesn't need it, but I'd have to kind of know what kind of credit card debt are we talking. Because if you have $5,000 of credit card debt that you're paying 24% on, it might be worthwhile taking $5,000 out of a 401k if your tax rate's only 15%. So that kind of might make sense, but it's dependent on his situation. He should talk to his accountant or someone. You want to weigh the cost of taking the money out from a tax standpoint compared to the rate that he's paying on the debt. One thing for sure, I would really strongly suggest that they hunker down and review all of their expenses and decide what they can get rid of. For example, if he's unemployed and they have credit card debt, do they have cable? Do they really need cable? Do they have, are they going out to eat? They should cut going out to eat. Make a list of their expenses and cut everything that's not necessary. And that gives you a little bit more time to kind of figure this all out. I had this happen with a client. She was making a lot of money. She had a company car. Her spouse had died. She had a couple children. It was critical for her to cut expenses. When you go from making $130,000 to nothing and she was the only breadwinner, it was critical. She was fortunate enough to have savings that helped get her through that period of transition. But she was amazing at jumping on that. She immediately wrote down all of the expenses, the newspaper, the dance lessons, the clothing budget, everything. And she cut everything that was discretionary. So only the non-discretionary expenses were left. She was awesome. She did a great job. She made that money last. She went and got another career, and she's doing really, really well. So look at the expenses first and get the credit card paid off, hopefully with cash flow that the spouse might be making as well. Good luck, Sarah. I think it's very nice that you're helping your father. Lots of good wishes for you to get through that period of time. One of the things we had mentioned too, Sarah, I guess, is Social Security when we talk about retirement. And some of the scary things around retirement is, what are you going to do? Are you going to be able to make it? Where are you going to get your next paycheck? So you do want to try to look at what might that money from the 401k provide for them. If there's a life expectancy of 30 years in your dad's family, then at 61, I suggest to people you keep working. I like working. I think working could be good. I think it keeps people younger. It gives you a purpose. It gives you spending money. There's a lot of good things about it if it's not killing you and stressing you out, of course. Then you find a different job. You work at my favorite place, Wawa. But anyway, you want to keep working if you think there's longevity there, because it's very difficult to make that 401k last a long time unless it's, $1 million or something like that. So you want to review your situation with someone who can help project that. But we were talking about Social Security earlier, and one of the options is to collect Social Security at 62. Now, 62 is early. You can still collect Social Security at 62. You take that reduced benefit, and you actually can still work and make some money without having to pay it back, as long as you stay under certain thresholds. So someone who collects Social Security at 62, if you make over, I don't remember the number is now, it's, let's say it's $15,600. For every dollar over that amount, over the threshold, you have to, for every dollar, let's see, for every dollar over, you have to pay back, for every $2 over, you have to pay back a dollar if you're 62. So if you stay under those certain thresholds, you don't have to pay back any of that money. That might be another way to manage some of the cash flow. If we don't think Dad's going to go back to work again, or he just can't go back to work again, if he can make it to 62, start collecting Social Security, maybe have a part-time job on the side, as long as he's making below a certain amount, he doesn't have to pay back any Social Security. And that's one way to get manage cash flow as well. All right, so lots of things going on in retirement. I've mentioned it can be scary. You want to make sure that you understand how you're going to pay your expenses. What's your paycheck? Is it going to be Social Security? Is it only Social Security? You could have a 401k. What would that stream of income look like? You don't want to totally deplete it. You can't even anticipate what your expenses might be at age 70 when you're only 60, or what your expenses might be at 80. So you want to make sure that you have factored in your longevity and how you're going to pay those ongoing expenses. Social Security only goes up maybe 2% a year. Pension checks, sometimes if you're lucky enough to have a pension, there's not a cost of living adjustment. So with inflation, your pension won't keep up with that. So you want to make sure that you have other means that will help stay on pace with your cash flow needs. How are you going to do that? So that's why you need to save as much as you can when you're younger, because you don't know how long you're going to last. You want to make sure it's going to take some time. And for many people today, we don't have pensions anymore. And Social Security is not enough typically to get us through those golden years. So you need to have some savings to take care of your living expenses. I just heard, I was at a presentation recently, the Women's Summit at Cedar Crest College, and someone I was doing a presentation with had a great idea. She and her girlfriends were talking that when they retire, they're all going to get together, four of them, and get a house, and they'll all live together and share the expenses. And I thought, you know, why aren't we seeing more of that? You're not going into a home, but you're sharing a house, like when you're in college. I think it sounded like a great idea, and I think we should think about that more often. The golden girls kind of thing. Golden girls, the golden guys, whatever it takes. And sharing expenses can make a big difference in your lifestyle and your choices. And then you have built-in friends too, which is really good for your health and your longevity to have people that you're communicating with. All right. So one of the things you might want to think about before you go into retirement is to talk about what that's going to look like with a financial planner, project out what your cash needs might be, what kind of income you can expect from your investments, from your Social Security. If you have the option of pensions, you want to make sure what those options are, what your choices are as far as Social Security, because you can collect early, collect late, spousal benefit. Some of those still exist for certain people born in certain years. You want to know if they apply to you. And pensions, there are single life options, joint and survivor options. If you're married, it to have a spouse benefit. If you're not married and you're single and you say, well, I'm going to go in and collect the single benefit, maybe you had children from a prior marriage. If you have the single option and you die the next day, that whole pension that had built up for you is poof gone. So you might really want to think about what your pension options are, even if you're not married, as to whether or not you want to leave some kind of legacy for other relatives or loved ones or children from a prior marriage. sometimes there is an option called a term certain. That could work for you in those cases, or you could name a beneficiary in certain circumstances. It's very important to know your options. All right, all situations are unique. Avoid comparisons and make sure you talk to a trusted professional about your particular situation and your particular circumstances. Again, tonight, it's always about general information and not specific advice. So make sure you know what applies to you. I thank everyone who called in tonight. I know it's a gorgeous night, and I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. It's so much fun for me. I hope it was informative for you as well. Next week, we're going to talk about having financial conversations with family and why. It's very important. Why? Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Lori. And make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.